You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
The primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart.
So don't tell me about China. I know China.
China. I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
The countdown is on for the United States election, which is taking place next Wednesday afternoon New Zealand time or next Tuesday local time. Both candidates are wrapping up their campaigns, with Democrat nominee Kamala Harris giving her closing remarks in Washington yesterday. At this rally, she emphasized the policies she'd deliver if elected. She juxtaposed her day one to-do list against what she says is Trump's day one enemy list and left with a final get-out-to-vote message.
Let us fight for this beautiful country we love. And in 7 days, we have the power, each of you has the power, to turn the page and start writing the next chapter in the most extraordinary story ever told.
And Republican nominee Donald Trump hosted a controversial rally in Madison Square Garden, which he has defended, along with disputing comparisons between his campaign and Nazis.
I don't think anybody has ever seen anything like what happened the other night at Madison Square Garden. The love in that room. It was breathtaking, and you could have filled it many, many times with the people that were unable to get in. But politicians that have been doing this for a long time, 30 and 40 years, said there's never been an event so beautiful. It was like a love fest, an absolute love fest, and it was my honor to be involved. And hopefully, you know, they started to say, well, in 1939, the Nazis used Madison Square Garden. Well, and you know what? But can you imagine that? 1939, the Nazis, they were. But how terrible to say, right? Because, you know, they've used Madison Square Garden many times. Many people have used it, but nobody's ever had a crowd like that. And I tell you what, right now, nobody's ever had love like that. That was love in the room, and it was love for our country.
Early voting is underway and has already sparked discussions of voter fraud, especially from Republican candidates who falsely claim it's a widespread issue. I spoke about both of these topics, as well as how young people are feeling about the election, with Yale Daily News' Andre Faoso. I started by asking about the controversy surrounding Trump's recent rally. Donald Trump is hot off a rally in Madison Square Garden. Why was this rally particularly controversial?
There's been major backlash because of the racist, misogynistic, and false comments made by invited speakers at the event. Tony Hinchcliffe, a comedian and commentator, spoke in the lead up to Trump's appearance at Madison Square Garden, and he stoked particular animosity towards the Latin American community, particularly Puerto Ricans, who, I'm not going to repeat the comment here, but it was a particularly offensive and inflammatory comment about Puerto Rico itself, which did offend the Latin American community and did serve to be quite hurtful. But beyond that, Hinchcliffe and other people who made appearances at this speech honed in on particularly racial stereotypes and misogynistic comments that also stoked major levels of division amongst both Republicans that were appalled by the comments that were made, but then also Democrats who completely disagree with the premise of everything that was said at the rally.
How have the Democrats responded to this event?
Well, Kamala Harris came out immediately after and said that she completely disagreed with what was said at the rally and said that the rally itself was nonsense. However, the Harris campaign and the Democratic Party itself have been silently distancing themselves from Joe Biden after he said early this week that Trump voters are garbage, which could be hurtful in the lead up to the election. Prominent members of the Latin American community in the United States have come out in support of Kamala Harris following the Madison Square Garden Trump rally, most notably Puerto Rican rapper and singer Bad Bunny.
How has this kind of rhetoric shaped the election?
Well, this election we've seen comments thrown towards Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, to false and hurtful comments about Latin Americans, to talk show host and former Fox News presenter Tucker Carlson calling Kamala Harris a, quote, Samoan Malaysian low IQ former California prosecutor, unquote, which we all know isn't true. Kamala Harris is not Samoan or Malaysian. But anyways, this rhetoric targeting race and stereotypes have become an unfortunate norm in this election cycle. These comments have stoked major divide at the intersection of partisanship and personal identities this election. And as we have seen historically, this rhetoric can mold individuals to lash out on certain communities. This was particularly the case in Springfield, Ohio, where Haitian immigrants felt threatened for their lives because of the comments made by J.D. Vance and the Trump campaign about Haitian immigrants that lived in Springfield, but then also the immigrant community in the United States themselves, which in many regards are the backbone of industries here.
Accusations of voter fraud slowed down finding out the election outcome in 2020. Is this likely to happen again?
The Republican Party has been putting or has filed hundreds of electoral lawsuits at the federal and state levels to both slow down the result of this election, but also bar some people from being able to vote. In Georgia, Republican officials have pushed for the Georgia Election Board to hand count all ballots, which could set back the election outcome for days, since Georgia is a key battleground state this election. The FBI have also been investigating instances of damaged and burnt mail-in ballot drop boxes in Washington and Oregon, containing hundreds of ballots. And today, the Supreme Court allowed an effort in Virginia, purported by the Republican Party, to exclude up to 1,600 ballots assumed to be sent in by non-citizen voters. However, NBC News and other media outlets here in the United States have spoken to voters that were affected by the ruling, whom have proven their citizenship status through the provision of official documents, including their passports.
What are the difficulties voters face in the United States to be able to vote or have their vote counted?
Well, it includes some of these electoral measures and lawsuits that have been filed by Republican officials in swing states. But also, voting in the United States is traditionally known to not be as easy as in other countries. For starters, mail-in ballots can only be given to people who have a reasonable excuse, including a health condition. But then also, in the aftermath of COVID-19 in 2020, mail-in ballots became a lot more popular. But there are, particularly in terms of mail-in ballots, certain challenges in terms of logistics, but then also timing, that can hinder the process of allowing or enabling people to vote. Particularly here at Yale, I've spoken to a few students who have had a hard time receiving their mail-in ballots and then also getting guidance on where to send them in and how to as well.
Can you talk a bit about how people in the States are feeling about the election, particularly young people?
I found that people want to talk about the election, but also don't want to talk about it at the same time, almost as if they have a feeling they'll jinx the outcome of if they jump to a conclusion about how they're feeling it'll turn out. Certainly the people around me are hopeful that Harris will pull through with a victory. However, I do feel a sense of angst, but also relative stillness in the day-to-day political discourses that have happened or have been happening in the lead up to the election. All the partisan events on campus have died down and people are just engaging in their regular daily activities. And besides the media whirlwind, which I'm sure New Zealand has caught major attention of, the continuation of people's regular daily activities, regardless of this big pivotal moment, is just indicative of the fact that for many Americans, life just goes on in the lead up to this historic moment, which could end up being life-changing.
What is voter turnout predicted to be, especially amongst groups who historically don't vote?
A quarter of the eligible voting population has already voted, so that's more than 46 million Americans. This election is expected to be the nearest vote, especially in swing states. So both Democrats and Republicans have spent significant effort on mobilizing voters in key areas where voters potentially wouldn't have considered participating previously. Obviously, there's really major consequential issues which Harris and Trump have both campaigned on, including immigration, the war in Gaza, the economy, and then also just the future trajectory of America. So ensuring that voters who potentially didn't vote in the last election are inclined to vote this election could be a make or break for either Trump or Harris in this election. So it's a really wait and see to find out whether the mobilization on either side has benefited them, really.
I then spoke to Tom Unger, political commentator and former political show host at Radio Active. Tom Unger is on the ground in New York City and spoke to audience members at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally yesterday. I started by asking if he could give his general assessment of how people in the States are feeling about the election.
So it's been really interesting here on the ground. I'm currently in Jersey City, specifically an area that I would call traditional working class, quite multicultural. And what's been of note to me is just the lack of Kamala Harris support or Democrat support. I was here in 2012 prior to the Obama-Romney election. Back then that was referred to as an election with a lack of excitement, but there was still Obama paraphernalia everywhere. I've yet to see any Harris stuff, which is interesting. Obviously, this is a blue state, so there may be less resource-focused within this area. But I've also noticed that within New York. If you go into any of the gift shops, which are scattered throughout New York, there's significant amounts of Trump material, including T-shirts of Trump post-shooting, T-shirts of Trump pulling the finger at Biden, but very, very little Harris material. I don't know if that's just a sign of what tourists are keen on, but you'd really struggle to find much Democrat material here, which is a massive contrast to when I was last in this city. Talking to people, it's been really interesting. Most people here are Democrats. Most people here support Harris, but there's not necessarily that excitement that you'd associate with a general election. Myself and some other political commentators went to the outside of the Madison Square Garden rally on Sunday, which was a Trump rally. Really interesting talking to people on the ground there. Obviously, that's his base. People that are diehard Trump supporters, and it was significant. There were a lot of people. Hearing the support there, it was interesting. A few Nazi comments to me, which wasn't appreciated but expected, and just really interested to get an insight there. So overall I'd say there's support for both bases here. There's more obvious support for the Trump base, but I think, as we say, it's a blue state and the Democrats will be focusing their support elsewhere. It's just surprising that it's not more obvious on the ground.
I then asked for his insight into the Harris campaign this close to the election.
So the Harris campaign is really focusing on those swing states where the election is won or lost, specifically up in the Rust Belt, which were traditionally Democrat seats, but in the 2016 election went Trump. So that's Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, with a major focus on Pennsylvania from both camps. Harris is conducting quite a targeted campaign there. She's doing two or three events in Michigan or Pennsylvania across the week each week for the past few. That's an attempt really to just get the base out. And I think both campaigns are actually doing that. So as you can see, just even with the choice of vice presidential nominee, it's about getting that base out. It's not necessarily about targeting swing voters. I think the Trump campaign, as I say, similar strategy, but it's also trying to flood the news cycle. Obviously, we've seen Trump do that for the past 9 years. He's said comments on everything and anything. Here in New York and New Jersey, he has flooded the narrative. If you go to any pub or cafe, he's on the news, particularly in the sports setting. So we watched some American football on Sunday at a little pub just off Times Square, and every third ad across every ad break, there were about four games on screen, so this was simultaneous across the different games. There was quite significant anti-Kamala material from the Trump campaign, and you can see with his appearance on Joe Rogan and that sports-heavy cycle, he's really targeting the independent, potentially male-dominated audience alongside just complete news coverage. On top of that, every major newspaper here has him across all articles on the front page. And the news agents, which used to be a staple of New York, where people would buy their coffee and their bagel and read the daily news. The daily news is no longer such a thing. It's a major thing I've noticed since I last came here. Obviously, it's all online, but there are a few Rupert Murdoch-associated newspapers planted there with items such as "Time to Change This Madness," endorsements of Trump. So he really is flooding the cycle, as has been his operation for the past 9 years. Whether that is enough to counter the targeted campaign of Harris in the swing states, I guess he's hoping that those very few people who haven't made up their mind will just be, when it comes to voting in the booth, they'll think of what they saw most recently in the news, which is almost definitely Trump. Back on the Harris campaign, it's got a strong ground game, lots of big names, lots of big campaigners going down to those swing states to try and get those people out. Again, they're doing a real target on African-American voters too, alongside some of those more traditional working class demographics, and we will know in a week whether that's the case. If you had asked me to call it, I couldn't. I'm going to go with what the polls say. It's too close to call. But I think that saturation in the media from Trump has been significant. And it being on the ground here and talking to people, it just makes it really clear that Trump is on the mind.
And I asked how this election could be relevant for New Zealanders.
Of note, out of the people that I've met so far, I referred to the woman we met from the Madison Square Gardens, who referred to me and my colleagues as Nazis. She discussed what she described as the unfair treatment toward New Zealand's native people, referring to Māori people, and how they are being given better rights than the rest of New Zealanders. When we asked about that and how she had information about a country she didn't know much else about, she referred to tweets that Elon Musk had put out in reference to this. And I think that, in reference to my previous comments last week, is an example of how social media and how the current election may impact New Zealand. This sort of campaigning tool, being X as it currently exists, might help influence how the world sees us. And depending on where you stand on that issue, you may view that positively or negatively, but it was certainly a unique experience to hear that here in New York.
That was Andre Farwell from the Yale Daily News about political commentator Tom Unger on Trump's Madison Square Garden rally and the feeling on the ground ahead of next week's United States election.
Excuse me, I'm really rich.
That was State of the States.
Bye-bye.
How stupid is this?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.